It's time for Twit. Justin Robert Young joins O'Malik and Dwight Silverman. We'll talk about Google and the future of Don't Be Evil, a new television set built into a credenza from IKEA, and the future of Netflix. It's all ahead next. Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android.
Video bandwidth for Twit is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 350, recorded April 22nd, 2012. The Jar Jar of Tech. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage using your own computer and printer whenever you need it. You'll never have to go to the post office again. For my special $110 bonus offer, go to Stamps.com today and use the offer code TWIT. And by GoToMeeting. Meet face-to-face from anywhere in the world with GoToMeeting with HD Faces. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and use the offer code TWIT. And by Ford. Featuring voice-activated Sync App Link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice, helping keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Learn more about the technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to Audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID Audible_com. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show that covers the latest, greatest tech news that broke earlier. But we can talk about it right now as we gather around our Sunday roundtable, starting to my left with Dwight Silverman of the Houston Chronicle Tech Blog, blog.cron.com/techblog. Hey, Dwight.
Hello. How are you, Leo?
I'm very good. You also host the Technology Bites show.
That's right, on Wednesday nights on KPFT at kpft.org.
Are they back on the air where they were down for a while, right?
Oh, you saw that. Yeah, we had a lightning strike hit the tower, and
wow.
I'm not sure that it's the power is all the way back up, but we are back on the air. We were streaming, of course, the whole time online. But that's the second lightning strike at that station. They did it on the lightning hit the station itself several months ago and knocked out a bunch of the equipment, and of course, it's a little Pacifica station.
Jeez
and
Louise.
So... finding the money, you know, to fix those things.
Is it a little medieval, or does that sound like a sign from God that maybe George Bush was right? I don't know.
Well, you know, KPFT, early on when it first went on the air, was bombed off the air by the KKK. So they kind of wear that as a badge of pride. So, you know.
So now God and the Klan hate.
That's right. God and the Klan coming after
it. Strange bedfellows.
Anyway, I'm just joshing. You know I'm a raging liberal. And it's great to have you. Thank you for being here. Also, to on our Skype today, O'Malik with his hot new Heil PR40 microphone.
That's right. That's right. How are you doing, Leo?
Oh, I'm closing my eyes and just to imagine. It's like you're here with us, Om.
I've always been with you in spirit, with sound.
It sounds so good. Om, of course, is the guy who created Giga Om, and is just the guy. He once called me the Yoda of tech. He's the Yoda of tech.
With that voice, he's like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
He's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
It's just the disembodied voice reassuring us to trust ourselves.
So actually, he's been dead for years. Is that what you're saying?
You didn't know that?
Which of you has poorer grammar?
I'm a hologram.
Anyway, great to get you back on. You've been all over the place since we talked last. I love following you on Path because Om travels like crazy. And you were in India, I know, and... just fun to watch, fun to follow.
Went to see my mother, my dad. Had fun.
But you're back.
I am.
And apparently the thing that you missed most was coffee.
Yeah, always the problem.
He was like, towards the end of the trip, posting pictures of sight glass coffee. Someday, I'll get back to
Come
coffee.
Come back to me.
Come back.
Good tea, though. That was great tea.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. I went to New York after that, Seattle. It was fun. It's been a good travel year for me.
What are you looking for, Om?
I'm looking for inspiration.
And did you find it?
A little bit. I think the more interesting way to think about technology is to look outside technology. And I go to all these places looking for that. And I come back very refreshed and, you know, with a fresh perspective on things. You know, if you live in Silicon Valley too long, you start smoking the air,
yep,
which we have here, and stop believing and start believing what is essentially Silicon Valley trying to solve Silicon Valley's problems.
It becomes an echo chamber.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went out basically to look for reality and real people and how they use technology. And
wow, what a concept.
Yeah.
I don't know. Fun. How was that? I don't know if I could handle real people.
I think, you know, you do a pretty good job of that, Leo. I think, you know, it just is very nice to see the show and still not feel that it's insidery. So it's quite.
It's the challenge. One of the reasons I didn't move Twit to San Francisco is because it is, San Francisco really is. Like, you go down this, everywhere you go to McDonald's and there's a guy talking about his B round of funding.
Mm-hmm.
And here it's a little bit more, well, we talk about cows and eggs.
And that's right.
The butter and eggs. I want to invite you all. The Butter and Eggs Day Parade is coming up next weekend. And if you're in town, it's a wonderful little parade. Petaluma is such a small town that everybody in town is actually in the parade. But
wow.
But the way they handle that so that somebody's watching is you lead the parade, and then it goes around in a circle, and then you sit down and you watch the next people that come around. So that everybody gets to be in the parade and watch the parade. And it's a wonderful family time for all.
There we
it's
go.
It's really good. It's really good. You remember the beginning of Blue Velvet, the slow motion fire truck going by?
Sure.
It's just like that, minus the gas mask and the Robert Duvall and all
that. Does the parade have an app, Leo?
It should. You know, Petaluma, yeah. No, there's no, we don't have apps here. We
you
should
have
a butter and eggs app. Why don't we have an app? That's a great idea.
The butter can talk to the eggs about their Series B round of funding.
Exactly. There, one of the things in the echo chamber, we've talked about it for several weeks now, is that $1 billion Instagram purchase. That felt very bubbly, didn't it, Om? Or what did that feel like to real people? I mean, what did they think?
I think there is an interesting after effect of that deal, which is going to happen is a lot more people will be moving to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Because it's the, you know, it's like the firing gun has been shot, the starting gun has been fired, so people can come here and start companies. And essentially, you know, I think the way I thought of Instagram is why, and I think a lot of mainstream people saw Instagram, they saw it as a way to star in your own reality TV show.
Right.
Essentially, you know, you
right.
create your own reality and you follow all these people, you talk to them. It just is essentially a reflection of our modern society. And that's why it took off and it got 30 million people only on iPhone, which is quite astonishing. So I think from that perspective, it's a pretty, you know, it is an interesting company on the valuation. I mean, geez, when you are, you know, talking about people like Mark Zuckerberg with a $100 billion Facebook, it just is a rounding error. So bubbly or not, I don't know.
Right. Also with us, Justin Robert Young. Love having Justin in studio. It's so great.
Hi. Hey, everybody.
He's a regular host on NSFW, but you don't ever see him in person.
No, I very rarely make personal appearances. I'm
so great.
Reclusive, like Howard Hughes. I just I lock myself up and...
He's been peeing in jars around the studio all day. It's very strange.
Well, you know, I got to make sure that the energy feels right. I got to feel at home. I got to have my jars.
Also the host of Weird Things podcast.
Yep.
And you read, in fact, we're giving you the link for this. You read some of Andrew Main's stories, I know.
Yeah, that's the new one is Andrew Main Stories, the podcast, which I read audiobook style, a new Andrew Main short story every week. And that's going really cool. And yeah, that's the Weird Things site right there for anybody watching live.
I've been reading Public Enemy Zero on my Kindle. That's
amazing.
Heart-stopping.
Yeah, yeah.
Holy cow. That has the best... You know, I thought for a long time Snow Crash was the best first chapter ever written.
Wow.
I'm not saying Snow Crash... yet, but it's close. It gets your heart pumping.
I'll tell you what. I'm actually, like, Andrew's not watching live because he's in Italy right now, but he's going to be very excited to hear you say that.
Yeah, that's great.
No, it's super cool. And that book is actually, you can download for free on podcast. I read the entire audiobook version of that you can get on iTunes or buy it uninterrupted at andrewmain.com/books. But listen to that. Better, you know, like not exactly Snow Crash, but close to
it
Snow
must have been
Crash.
Fun to read, actually.
I loved reading that book. Certainly is very atmospheric.
So let's see. Microsoft's numbers are out. I don't know. Gosh, it seems like it's... don't even want to talk about stuff like that, but we've got such great, inspiring people here, and I'm talking about quarterly results for Microsoft. They had a good quarter.
They had a good quarter, largely based on their enterprise, but what was kind of surprising about that was what had been the shining star last year, which was Kinect, and the entertainment division was flat, and there was a lot of enterprise money in this one, in advance of Windows 8, which is also kind of interesting.
Yeah. Now, of course, Windows, this always happens right before a new Windows comes out, which is there's a pause. There's almost like everybody in the PC industry holds their breath. Nobody buys anything waiting for the next version of Windows. So maybe we won't see that in this quarter, but then the quarter that we're in right now might see that. But boy,
what's interesting about Windows 8 is that right now we're kind of in the upswing of the cycle of people moving off of XP. You know, businesses have
XP.
Not leapt to it.
XP.
And now they're moving off
XP.
Of XP.
That's three seven. Versions ago.
I know. And so I don't know necessarily that businesses are going to move to Windows 8.
I can tell you right now they ain't.
Now,
yeah,
why?
This is the migration now for businesses, and Windows 8 will be consumer if it sells at all.
If at all.
Right.
Why is it not attractive to enterprise?
Because it's a tablet operating system on a desktop computer. I don't even – it baffles me that Microsoft – now, I like it, by the way, because it's kind of cool and fun, and I kind of like the interface. But it's going to drive businesses crazy because they don't want cool and fun. They want productivity. They want a desktop. They want everything to look like it did in Windows 7 or actually Windows XP.
I finally got a chance to put it on a tablet. I had tried it at the Build conference in September, and they made the press give the tablets back just before we left. And I got a chance to install it this week again on a tablet with the consumer build.
What'd you think?
And it's much better. It's much better on a tablet. But the problem with it is that it really forces you, tablet or a desktop, to keep going back to the Metro interface. And I think if people just want to use Excel and Word and the traditional versions of desktop software, they're not going to have any need for Windows 8. You know, if they're not interested in Metro, they're just going to leave it aside. And right now, there's not that much that's compelling about Metro. I think the transition, when you make the shift in the operating system from desktop to Metro, is a little jarring. And some of the things I've heard kind of on the side from Microsoft about what they're working on as they run up to the goal master will address that. But I still think forcing people to use that Metro interface when what they want to do is use the desktop is going to backfire on them, similar to kind of the way Vista did, I think, a little bit.
Meanwhile, though, $17.41 billion in revenue, 6% up, $5 billion in profit. It was a very good quarter for them. And this waiting for all of their newer products, Windows 8, Office 15, Windows Phone has not been, I don't think, added too much, as you said, to the overall. Xbox is kind of long in the tooth. Kinect's cool, but that was last year. Do you care about Windows 8 at all?
I don't.
It used to be the big story, right? Is what's Windows going to be?
I think, you know, there's a lot of people who care about Windows 8. I just don't happen to be one of them. So I'd be, you know, wrong in giving any kind of opinion about it. I have seen it and I've used it, and I think it'll be a great tablet environment. I just think it'll be pretty awesome for tablet environment. I have not experienced any productivity. I will make just a random observation, which has got nothing to do with Windows, is that more and more of my computing time has been siphoned off by my iPad and my iPhone. It could have been like Android devices if they were, you know, I had those, but it just is the tablet and the phone have taken more of my compute cycles. And so the computer itself is reduced to, you know, doing the video conversation with you right now and basically writing those long form posts. Even those I don't do anymore on the computer.
It's for heavy it's for heavy lifting. But I, you know what, Skype on the iPad is actually great. I don't even Skype on the desktop anymore. It's great on the iPad.
Yeah,
but then I can't use my fancy.
I know you have a fancy. we did that so you'd have to use a computer.
The one thing about Windows 8 is they do seem like they announced this week that they're simplifying the amount the versions that they're coming out with. Right?
There are four SKUs. That was the big announcement. Is they're going to do and that? Thank God they did this.
Well, because
it's been crazy.
If it's going to be a consumer operating system, if it's not going to super appeal to enterprise, then it makes sense to kind of not make it the, you know, Windows Agriculture Edition.
Right.
You know, Windows, if you have 4 to 5 kids, you know, like
right.
To just have a very, I mean, it's not as simple as, let's say, what Apple does, where they just release AOS and you put the OS on or you don't have it on.
It's but, close to it. There's Windows 8. Windows 8, and then there's Windows 8 Pro.
Sure.
Which is the business version. And then there's Windows 8 Enterprise, which is even more. Actually, that has to do with the licensing more than the capabilities.
Yeah.
And then there's Windows 8 China.
Yes.
CN.
Windows RT.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot RT, which is
Windows
the tablet.
RT.
Now, that is the worst name I can think of.
I call it Windows Retweet.
Yes.
What would you... What... this is guaranteeing that no one will be able to find Windows 8 when they search for it, the tablet version.
And it won't run, the Windows RT won't run any legacy desktop apps
no.
except for the ones that ship with Windows. So, like, it'll run Notepad.
Right. But it's basically Metro, right?
Right. And it will also, I just read a piece today, it won't work with Active Directory. So if you're thinking about bringing it into work and handing it to your IT guy and say, here, hook this up to our domain, it
Too
won't
bad.
Do it. And it won't do it the same. The x86, the traditional tablets, the Intel-based tablets, won't do it the same way that the desktop version will either. They have to use something called Intune, which will let it connect. So it, you know, it's not even necessarily going to be all that friendly in the enterprise.
We should explain for the Mac users in the audience that Metro does not mean it gets mani-pedis and buys its shoes
yes,
at
does.
Tootsie Plohound. It means... that it's that the kind of the Zoom crisscrossy. It's that tablet
the tiles,
interface.
The
yeah,
tiles.
Yeah. Tiles. It also enjoys Cosmic Palette.
I think it would be better if it liked Cosmos. I think really that would be better. Yeah,
it's
what
very
a terrible name. What is
and
wrong? With,
capri pants.
So am I. What is wrong with that Microsoft that they call this, which I think is probably their greatest hope. Given that the iPad has got to be killing them, they're Windows RT, which, by the way, it already has. There already is a Windows RT. That's the core services Windows. It's the Windows runtime.
Right. And this is Windows real time is what.
Is that what it means?
Is that it?
Yeah. Real time. Yeah.
Mm. What does it do?
And, like, why not call it real time? It's
See,
not even like.
Ohm, you've been hanging out with real people too much, Ohm. I can tell that right now. What does it do?
Well, whatever it does it in real time. It's not recorded. It's not an echo.
All
it's
right.
not tape delayed. It's real time, baby.
What does it do? That's a great question, Bill. I have no idea.
Well, actually, it's runtime. I'm sorry, it is runtime.
No, it's not runtime because runtime is WinRT.
Oh, right. That's what I... Right. That's,
so
yeah,
the
I
Windows
misspoke.
RT...
It's not real time.
See, you see the confusion.
Sure.
Yep.
I think it's real title. Windows real title.
I like Windows Retweet. I really do. I think that's really
Windows
excellent.
Windows Retweet.
Yep. Rotten Tomatoes.
Really tired.
I think this is Windows for ARM, right? Like the
yes. Yeah, this is what they used to call yeah. WOA. Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't they just call it Windows for ARM?
Yeah. Or tablet like, Windows or Windows tablet.
Or call it Windows AT, you know.
Windows Tablet Edition. What would be wrong with that?
Doesn't this all just seem like too many cooks in the kitchen? And really the difference between having a clear artistic vision or a clear
yes.
vision to say, this is what it is, and we want to communicate with people who would like to buy and install this service. in a very
I think you're right. I think it's a case of there probably were better names, but the differing warring parties couldn't agree.
Yeah. So they call it tablet because tablet is like blur.
They chose the name no one liked, but no one hated, no one owned, because it was the only thing politically they could do.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it sounds like to me.
Windows Random Thought. I like that. I got to get your opinion, guys. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I got to get your opinion on what the FBI just did. Because I can tell you, in the real world, it's making people nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And there are now articles in every mainstream journal saying your internet may stop working July 9th. And this is making people nuts. And I think it was reprehensible of the FBI, but I want to get you to tell me. Because I may be completely wrong. No, they did not order hookers. That was another story entirely.
No.
We're going to talk. That's
the Secret Service. Calm down, people.
Please, do not confuse your federal agents. But first, thank you, chat room. But first, I want to talk a little bit about stamps.com. Speaking of federal, you can buy your own postage, print your own postage. Now, there are people who probably think you're going to go to jail, like if you printed your own money. But no, you can actually use your computer and your printer without special inks, without a postage meter. You can actually print stamps. I did it. You know, I did it the other day. I've got my envelope in the other room. It's so cool because we use stamps.com. Stamps.com. I want you to check it out at stamps.com. It's Windows or Mac. It lets you print your own postage. It lets you basically bring the post office to your desk. You never have to go to the post office again. You print the postage. You put it on a package or envelope. You could postcard anything. They've even got, and they'll give it to you for free for shipping and handling, a scale that's a USB scale that you pop it on there. The software sees the scale, says exactly what the postage is, prints it out. If you're mailing internationally, I'm sure, when you want to send a letter to your mom, it's a pain to mail something to India because you've got to go to the post office, get international stamps and fill out forms. This does that all automatically. You don't have to go to the post office. You've got discounts the post office cannot offer, will not offer, on express mail and priority mail, up to 21% on express mail, 15% on priority mail. You don't even have to go to the post office with the packages. They come and get it. The mail, you just call them, or the mail carrier on his regular rounds will come and get it. It's a pretty good deal, I got to say. Now, here's the special offer, a one-month trial, and they've thrown in some sweeteners to make this good. Now, but you got to do this right, because normally it's an $80 offer. You see that $110 offer? The way you get there is by clicking that retro radio microphone in the corner, as seen in the Hunger Games. Click that.
And keep it hip for the kids, Leo.
That's just for the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know that? The Hunger Games microphone? Click that one. and then enter the offer code TWIT, and you'll go right here to this page that I'm seeing, and you get $55 in postage coupons. Now, I got to tell you, people say, wait a minute, that's not all at once. No, not all at once. They spread it out over like 4 or 5 months. So, you know, it's not like I'm going to give you $55 in postage. You spread it out, but it is free. You get the digital scale for free. You pay shipping and handling. You get a supplies kit, and you get the 4-week trial. All right? And this is such a great trial offer. I want you to do it, and I promise you will never go back to going to the post office again. Stamps.com. Offer code for this is TWIT. Make sure you click the Hunger microphone in the upper right-hand corner.
Be like Katniss, kids. Get your stamps at stamps.com.
You know, this is a whole new approach I never even thought of.
There we go.
We need you to appeal to the youth.
Finally, we can click to a younger demo.
We got to get the youth.
The weaselly guy with the odd-looking beard. Apparently, the kids love.
So, the FBI...
Thank you.
Yes. The FBI... I'm going to try to do this in an unbiased way.
Yes.
And then get your opinion on what you think of this.
I have an interesting story to tell you when you're done with this.
So you know where I'm going on this. You know where I'm going on this. Yeah. So in November, the FBI, in conjunction with Estonian police, arrested this wild group of people, these Estonian virus authors, that had been since 2007, they'd putting malware out called DNS Changer that would infect computers over, I think, 4 million computers over the 5-year period. And what it would do, among other things, it would change your DNS settings so that you would go through their malicious DNS server, and they would do things like inject ads into your web pages. They apparently made $4 million on these injected ads over the five. Was it 4 million or was more than that, actually? It was several million dollars a year.
I think
$14 million over that period of time.
Yeah, really. they would also, but they send you to spam sites. And in fact, they could do other things. One, among other things, what they did is they turned off antivirus updates and they turned off Windows updates so that if you had this malware on your system, very likely you'd get other malware because your system would never be updated or protected again. So when the FBI arrested these guys, and this is where I kind of get a little funny. I'm curious what you think. They went to the ICS and they said, would you take over the IP addresses for these servers and continue to serve proper domain name resolves through these servers? And so for since November, even if you had this malware, your system worked well. This part of your system worked fine. You got DNS worked. You didn't get any of the other stuff still happened, but your DNS worked fine. Now, the Internet Systems Consortium says, well, it's costing us money, so we're going to turn these servers off on July 9th. And they put out a big press release, and every newspaper in the country, and I bet the Houston Chronicle, has this big story that says for hundreds of thousands of people, the Internet will stop working July 9th. So tell me your story.
So this went up on our website, the front of our website, on Friday night. And I started getting emails from readers who were asking if our site had been hacked and a malicious story posted, and should they actually click on a link that takes them to an FBI site that will scan their computer. People were so freaked out about this.
They didn't
believe it was real.
It doesn't sound real. What was the All right, go ahead.
Right. So I looked at the story, and it's an Associated Press story, and you know, the writer is a real writer. And I got a little nervous. I clicked on it on my iPad and went over to the site, and sure enough, my iPad was not infected.
Yeah, of course not.
and it is legit, but the way the site looks, the whole theme of it sounds like a scam. And you would almost think if the FBI was going to do this, was going to, you know, essentially try to make sure that Internet service continued for these people, that at least it would try to do it in a way that didn't look like a scam itself.
Look at this.
Very suspect.
This is the FBI. First of all, this is the crappiest website I've ever seen. Look at the.
They're not solving crimes.
Even the text is aliased in the TED header, and this is the illustration that they give you. I haven't had a computer like that since 1998. Okay.
Look at that guy with no face.
He's got no face.
That's what happens when you click on malware. No face.
Yes. No face. This is
burn
the
your face off like Indiana Jones.
This is the DNS Changer Working Group. I don't know who these people are because they have a fix. They have a button. They have a big green button you can check. This is what they're telling people to do. Click this green button and then read this text, and you'll know if you're fixed or not. The following table is a list of all the easy Are You Infected sites. You're just encouraging people to do stupid stuff at this point, right?
This is everything we've told people not to
never
do to check your computer.
Never. And then if you think you're infected, take this action. Yeah, go get Hitman Pro from Surfright.nl. Oh, that sounds right.
It actually is really good software.
It's good software, but I'm sorry.
It's very good software.
Yeah, but
it sounds shady.
Oh, McAfee Stinger. That must be good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're going to sting something.
But here's my question. Doesn't this seem like, on the face of it, the FBI is not really doing the right thing by keeping these servers alive? The thing that they should do is tell people how to get rid of this software. There's other larger issues. Because these people have this malware, they almost certainly have lots of other malware in their system, that there's all other things going on. Why did the FBI decide to use these phony servers and then decide to pull the plug July 9th? It doesn't sound right to me.
It seems like liability on all ends. You know, they don't want to shut it down, and then all of a sudden they're the ones in charge of the computer not working, and now it's, you know, the government-sponsored blackout is the story, and then they try to keep it alive. They realize that it's costing them too much money, and now they're in a position where they have to do what they probably should have done at the beginning.
They should never have done it in the first place. Who is this working group?
And then meanwhile, there's just really no effective way that they can communicate in a clear, open, and honest way with the public. Everything is you know, it's clunky on their website. They don't have a good enough surrogate to sort of explain this in clear, plain language, which is why podcasts like this and sites that, you know, writers like Ohm and Dwight are important to explain this to the lay people, which are really the ones who are at most risk for this, that are already infected and have no idea what the hell's happening.
Is this maybe a symptom of how broken security is and how almost impossible for a normal person to I mean, look, anybody watching this show knows what to do and knows that these are okay and stuff. But I just worry about normal people. Ohm, you talked to some normal people recently. I just worry
about... You've gone on a world tour to meet all the normal people in the world.
I just worry about normal people and what they must think when they see this. And they're not getting the right information, by the way. Removing this malware is the tip of the iceberg.
What they should have done was just turned it off at the beginning.
Right.
And once you turn it off and people don't have internet access, they'll figure it out. They'll figure it out and they'll get the malware removed from their system.
In effect, what you did is you kept malware infected computers on the internet for an extra six months.
Right. Exactly.
I don't understand why they did that.
It kind of sounds like the Fast and the Furious thing.
Well, my only you know, the conspiracy theory, if I were Dvorak or Adam Curry, I'd say, well, they wanted people to go through their servers for a while. They were up to something. What were they doing? Ohm, do you have any thoughts on this?
I actually don't. I'm just fascinated listening to you guys.
Is this bizarre or what? I mean, I didn't even know about this until people started calling the radio show on Saturday saying, we saw this article, just like you, Dwight. We saw this article. Mm-hmm. Now what do we do? What's going on? Is this real?
I think they tried to play good guys. I mean, I think they were, you know, their heart was in the right place. Saying, okay, we don't want these people to lose internet access, but they're not doing them any favors by allowing their infected machines to keep working.
And then waiting till now to say, oh, by the way, we're going to turn off the internet in July.
Right.
Now, the good news is...
That's the wrong way to put it. You know, that's a really bad headline. Don't say you're going to turn off the internet.
It's the worst possible headline because it completely misses the point.
Right.
If you are infected now, this is actually a fairly minor infection now. There were 4 million computers. It's just a few hundred thousand. There are far bigger, even, you know, this Mac malware hit many more computers than that. So it's just very strange. I think a lot of people, millions of people are scared that should never have been worried. And the people who should be worried never got the information they should have gotten in the first place.
Also, in a lot of cases, many of the infected machines like this, if people haven't been updating their systems and don't run, you know, antivirus spyware, a lot of that stuff is on pirated machines running in China and in Eastern Europe. And so my suspicion is that a lot of the machines that are having their DNS properly redirected are not necessarily legitimate machines. There probably aren't that many in, you know, in people's homes.
Right.
It's probably in, so when they turn it off, it may not actually affect that many legitimate users.
I really think that there's a bad precedent set when the U.S. government, because remember, this is an international problem. But when the U.S. government kind of unilaterally decides to, well, you know what? We'll take over those servers. We'll run them for a little while. Don't worry about it. That really worries me. There's a little bit too much willingness in the federal government here in the United States to kind of intervene in a kind of blunt way with the internet. It started with SOPA, and this reminds me of the same kind of attitude.
Well, is there a question of who else would do it?
Or? Nobody should do it. They should do what Dwight said. They should arrest the people.
Okay, yeah.
And shut down the botnet and move on and let the normal process happen. It bothers me that the FBI was handling these redirections for 5 months.
It seems like people that don't want to have an outcome that they can be blamed for happen.
I think it's even worse. They wanted to look like the good guys, right? Oh, well, we saved you.
It is Operation Ghost Click, which I think is something that they should have focused more on because it's a cool name.
All right.
No matter what.
I don't want to belabor it. There's something that bothered me, and it bugged me a little bit.
Coming this fall, starring Zac Efron, Ghost Click.
It is a good name. I bet you Hollywood producers have already
yes.
optioned that.
Exactly. For the next Michael Tom Cera Cruise. Playing the leader of the Estonian hacker ring.
Michael Cera. Anybody got a 25-year-old actor? Michael Cera. Good.
Sure. Yeah. Estonian hacker? I'll buy it.
Of course.
Ryan Gosling.
Yes.
No, he's the good guy.
Take his shirt off.
Yeah. Oh, dude, totally. Yeah. Him and Chris Hemsworth. We have to solve it with no shit. Don't click.
We were talking about Microsoft. One other story about the Lumia. We talked about the Lumia 900. I like this phone. I love the Lumia 900.
A lot of positive buzz on it.
It's a great phone. I don't understand why they decided to release it on Easter Sunday when all the stores were closed. But anyway, they did. Now, if that weren't bad enough, European carriers...
resurrect their chances for Windows Phone.
He is risen.
Yeah. Now, the European carriers say, well, these aren't... We're not going to... we don't want them.
Well, now the buzz is that this was kind of the first foray, but that the next generations of Windows phones are going to be the real hotness.
How many years is that? is that going to work?
That's Microsoft's business model.
Next year,
it'll be great.
Sure.
This is the one that's got to really hurt. One of the Reuters has been asking the four major European telecom operators. They say all four of them are dissatisfied with the Lumia handsets. One said, really, if the Lumia came with the same hardware that came with Android in it and not Windows, it'd be much easier to sell.
That's just kinda... like, why is anybody surprised? Why are these carriers surprised? I don't know what the hell they were doing all these years. They can't predict.
I think it's because it was Nokia, don't you? That they thought,
I just think the phone companies have this sense of delusion and they don't really understand their own customers, it seems like. It's like, well, there is a reason. If you look at the data, people want to buy two kinds of phones. One is Android phones, and the other people want to buy the iPhone. And just to kind of jam another operating system on these people is going to be really tough. So, the Windows phone doesn't do anything different or new, and that's the problem. It's not. It can't stand out. Just the tiles are not enough for it to stand out, right? That's the key thing. It is, we can be the third option. Well, why do you need three options in life?
Right.
I can just be two.
There's nobody fleeing iPhone and Android saying, help us. What is the third option?
Well, I mean, if it was viable, if it was good, I think that, you know, there's...
No,
there's...
only among geeks.
You think so?
Only among geeks. This is something, I think this is where you go to the real people. Real people are not saying, well, what's new and different? They're not. They're saying, I got something that works. I'm good. Thanks.
Well, but the one thing
I understand Android. I bought Android apps. I'm fine. I bought iPhone. I got iPhone apps. I'm fine. They're not saying, but there's something new in town. We say, it's new. I got to try it.
Well, the one thing I think that is a normal person selling point is the price. You know, the Lumia was a very cost-effective phone, and you know, you could now get something that looks cool in your hand when you go to the phone store for a cheaper price. And I think that's a lot of the reason why Android saw a gigantic explosion, because people who wanted something that looked like the iPhone but is not as expensive as the iPhone and had a lot of the same apps, a lot of the same functionality.
But you could get a 3GS for $100. You can get an Android phone for $50 or free. So I don't even think they went on price anymore.
Yeah.
I think you get what you pay for, essentially. That's what it is.
Yeah.
I think the big thing with the phones is that people see their friends and family carry an iPhone, so they want an iPhone. It just is a herd mentality. People see their friends use Android, they want to buy a Samsung. Essentially, that's how people normally behave. That's how, you know, fashion trends start. Like, suddenly everybody's wearing, you know, skinny jeans or, you know, bell bottoms. Like,
not me.
Right? Well,
you don't want to see me in skinny jeans.
I will say this, and what I like to do with Twit is bring in original reporting.
Thank you.
And
finally,
we're breaking news here
from Brian Brushwood.
Twit. Well, I've received, I can't name my source,
okay,
but I've heard that Brian Brushwood's mom is fed up with both iOS and Android and longs for a simpler phone.
That's where they had an option. I think an opportunity.
And that if there were a simpler option, maybe that is the third way is something that isn't as complicated as iOS and Android.
It's not that simple.
It's also important to keep in mind that only about, we just crossed the 50% mark in penetration of smartphones. So there's another 50% out
there. So you're saying we're halfway in?
We're halfway in. And of course, I don't think it'll ever be 100%, but, you know, Microsoft sees an opportunity there. I think Microsoft also believes, and I'm not sure that I agree with it, that there's this longing to have an end-to-end experience from the phone to your desktop to the tablet. And that's, we go back to Windows 8. That's why Windows 8 looks like it does. And in fact, developers who write software for Windows Phone can just tweak the code a little bit and it runs on Metro, on the Metro UI. So they're trying to kind of get back to that holy grail that they initially tried to get to with their original Windows, what was their Windows Mobile and Windows CE or Wince. And and they're trying to get back to that holy grail of making, you know, one operating system that crosses over. They, I don't think they'll do it. But they think that the simplicity of it, the live tiles out on the home screen, being able to see your Facebook notifications and everything out on the home screen is simpler and is different enough that people will flock to it. I don't know that that's true, but that's their strategy and that's what they're thinking.
Well, I hope they succeed, right? Like the world needs more competition. So I don't want to take that away. But the current product is just not there yet. Like, you know, they definitely have their work cut out. And the fact
it's an almost product. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, both, you know, like you look at Microsoft's problem is that it's always willing to, you know, put products out in the market which are not fully done. Like they should, you know, they should have been calling this the Skype phone.
Oh, that would have been smart.
Just call it the damn Skype phone.
They own Skype.
Yeah, and keep it simple. Don't make it very complicated. Make Skype the linchpin of everything that phone does.
But is that going to excite the carriers? Did you call it the Skype phone?
That's a good point. The carriers might not like it.
The carriers are making money from data plans, not from voice minutes.
Ah.
Right? So they're already losing SMS traffic to Facebook and iMessage and things like that, the over-the-air services. So why not just build a carrier class as Skype experience in which everybody's happy, right? So the carriers make money making intra, you know, like going from Skype to landlines or other phones. You charge for that. You charge for international calls, you know. But, you know, they just needed to a completely radical rethink here. And I think they have a good asset in Skype. Skype has a brand presence. It is a smart product. You know, even though the UI is currently very bad, but it's still, they can do a lot more. Like they can create, like, I think they did a good job with Zoom. They just were like very late with it. And I think this time,
it wasn't good enough in the world where the iPod is dominant.
Right. And I think right now, at least with the Skype, they can overcome the brand challenge. They can build a simpler experience as to the person who texted you guys.
Of course, the irony of this, Om, is that they didn't have Skype for Windows Phone until today. They didn't even have Skype until today. They just released Skype for Windows Phone. It's like, I really wonder who's in charge at Microsoft and what they're thinking.
If there's one thing that they have succeeded at is that the Lumia and the Windows Phone so far have not shared or similar, have similar names to condoms like the Android phones have.
Oh, yeah, you saw that? That was
yes,
funny, wasn't
that
it?
That was my buddy Steve Kovac at the
we actually played
Silicon
that game.
Alley Insider.
Yeah.
And the condom or Android phone.
Yeah, we
game.
Played that game last week, and even Dvorak couldn't figure it out. The idea is you give a name of a condom, like Magnum.
Yeah, weird. Desire.
Desire.
Is the first one.
Condom or Android phone, or both. And in fact, it's both.
Yeah, both. Yeah. Boom.
I happen to know that one.
Yeah, the Hero.
Both.
Ooh. Only Android phone.
Oh.
Although now there's a marketing
I'd buy a
opportunity.
All right.
Be a hero.
I want a flip phone.
That's, you know what, when I...
You
when
and Brushwood's
I,
mom.
When
you
I hear people
phones.
Like Brian's mom say, I want a simpler phone, what I really think is they want a flip phone. They want a They want a feature phone. They don't want a smartphone. You know where Microsoft, again, had an opportunity? The Kin was a perfect halfway between smartphone and flip phone.
Well, and that lasted like
a week.
2 weeks.
It literally lasted a week.
They didn't know how to market it at all.
The problem is it had none of the features of a smartphone, but it had all the price of a smartphone. They were charging data plans for it. But if they had not done that, it had messaging. It had, you know, there was a keyboard one. It had a cute little camera. It was cute. It did most of what people want who don't want a smartphone, but they want something more than a feature phone.
It was originally designed as the replacement for the Sidekick, the Danger So they acquired Danger Inc.
Right.
And it was originally designed as a replacement for that, but Windows Phone wasn't quite out yet, wasn't ready, the Windows Phone 7, and so they released these, and they marketed it completely terribly. I think Microsoft has a serious marketing problem, and, you know, to go back, Windows 8, they can't market their way out of a paper bag anymore. Yeah. It's not, you know, that's their problem.
They spent $1 billion, according to Wikipedia, which never lies, $1 billion to develop the Kin.
Wow.
$1 billion. And they killed it in literally weeks.
I mean, I remember the commercials were still airing after they killed it.
I think these were exactly what people who don't want a smartphone wanted. They want kind of
I'm sure Microsoft is very comforted to hear.
Well, I think this was a great product. I'm really disappointed. You know, one of the problems was the same problem they're having a little with Windows Phone is that the carriers wouldn't sell it. You could not get they would say, no, you want an iPhone. No, you want an iPhone.
Or an Android. I mean, Android was rolling at the time that the Kin came out, right?
Yep. We're going to take a break, come back, and talk about the next iPhone. Guess what? It's made of liquid metal.
Ooh. Yeah.
Ooh. But first.
Yeah.
Like the Terminator. That's right.
Exactly. It's going to morph into Jason Patrick and ask you if you've seen this boy.
When did Skynet went live like last year, right?
Sure.
You know, I was watching Blade Runner. That's 2019. We got to hurry. We don't have much time left.
Uh-oh.
If we're going to build Borgs, we better get going. I'll tell you one thing you can do. You can meet with people online really well. Go to meeting with HD Faces. This, you know, okay. This is technology that will transform your business. Because as everybody knows, when you meet face-to-face with people, that's why we use Skype. We use video. We want to see what people's faces look like, what their expressions look like. Now here, if you could tie it into your meetings and GoToMeeting, of course, the best online meeting software with fantastic screen sharing. It's fast, it's secure, it's easy. And now they've added HD Faces, so you actually see the faces of the people, your clients, your colleagues, as you're meeting with them. Nowadays, with Teams distributed all over the world, you can't always, you know, meet in person. It's so easy to join a meeting, so easy to start a meeting on your Mac or your PC, and now you can be in meetings with video and audio on your iPad. It'll use the iPad. I got to pause this. That is so cool. You're using the iPad's built-in camera, built-in screen. Even on the Retina display, it looks fantastic. I think you got to try this right now. Look at that. Isn't that cool? Go to Meeting with HD Faces. Here's what you do. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. We've got a trial offer for you. All you have to do is use the offer code TWIT, and it's yours free for 30 days. And the iPad software free, of course, always. GoToMeeting.com. Enter TWIT as the offer code and try it free for 30 days. What a great way to bring the face-to-face meeting into the modern age. Thank you, Citrix, the makers of GoToMeeting, for your support.
I do want to apologize. That was Robert Patrick, not Jason Patrick, who played the T-1000 robot in Terminator 2. Yeah, I was immediately chastised by the chat room.
They are so smart.
They are. They're far smarter. It's almost like they're their own hyper-intelligent Skynet force.
The chat room is Skynet.
There we go.
I wouldn't be surprised. So
big realization.
So, look, this comes from a Korean newspaper, but on Wednesday, they said the iPhone 5 is likely to be made out of liquid metal. Now, liquid metal is something actually that Apple has used before. You know the little thing that you poke the SIM card out with? That's made out of liquid metal. But now they can make a whole phone out of it. Now, it's not really liquid.
Yeah.
But it is metal, right?
One would assume, sure.
It's an alloy of, get ready, folks, and please, if you're a mineralogist or metallurgist, just live with this because I'm going to do the best I can. An alloy of titanium, zirconium, nickel, copper, and other stuff that would make, it's the other stuff that's the, you know.
Yeah, that's like what they make hot dogs out of.
Yeah. Pig anuses, actually. It would make the. All right, now it's out. The secret's out.
Liquid metal is people.
It's made out of pig anus. But it does, the surface of the phone is smooth like liquid. And, you know, it is true. If you're going to do the they say that Apple's doing this TikTok development cycle where every other iPhone is a big upgrade because they want to give you the 2 years to get used to it. So the 3G, 3GS were pretty much the same. Then the 4, boom. And then the 4 and the 4S, pretty much the same. And then the 5, or whatever they call this next one, boom. Yeah. That'll be a big one.
They'll just call it iPhone, like they called the new iPad iPad.
It's just iPhone. You don't need a number. It's so good. So high strength, high wear resistance against scratching and denting. Strong, high strength to weight ratio, so it's fairly lightweight. They basically make it like they would make plastic. They mold it with injection molding, but yet you get metal. It sounds great, and Apple actually has used it before. They have some experience with it.
I mean, this seems like the way that Apple does things. They build up a component advantage, and they build up a manufacturing advantage, and then try to leverage that against every other competitor. To me, the most exciting thing about this that we have yet to see is exactly what this does in terms of their capabilities to make the phone thinner and lighter. And if it gives it, if they can use less material to give it a strong quality build, maybe that changes the form factor in a significant way past what the 4 and the 4S have been.
It'd be cool. It'd be cool to have.
Yeah. And apparently it's like scratch resistant. It's more scratch resistant, which is a cool idea.
Any thoughts? Anybody? Anybody want to say anything? Anything at all?
I don't know.
Just all that it's always a rumor with Apple. You never know what will happen with them. It could come out to be completely different.
I don't even know why I report on these.
But a Korean newspaper said it, guys.
It must be true.
North or south. Yeah. it's you know what I want is that material in Star Trek IV, the clear metal. That they did, ooh, that they used to hold the whales. That's what I want for my phone.
Isn't material? You know, actually, Jobs was kind of interested in this stuff because when they built the Fifth Avenue store, his original idea with the Apple Store. I remember reading this in the biography, the Walter Isaacson biography, was no panes at all. He wanted just solid, literally, which is a terrible idea, a solid glass wall, and he pushed Corning. I don't know who was. I presume it was Corning to make it. Bigger and bigger, and they finally got bigger. They actually replaced the panes. They got bigger and bigger panes because even though everybody said, this is dangerous. This is a terrible idea because he didn't want any bezel. He didn't want, you know, so I could see, absolutely, I could see Steve Jobs saying, you know, we're going to create this, you know, we're going to invest heavily in this. We're going to make this happen.
So when Tim Cook, you know, sees the shimmering figure of Steve, like at the end of Return of the Jedi and asks him, what next? What now?
Yeah.
Liquid metal.
Liquid metal. Let's see. Facebook, apparently, according to some, the IPO date has now been set for Facebook. It is, what is it, May 17th? Will the world change?
I mean, that would be if we are, as we've seen with the Instagram acquisition, kind of moving into a new bubble period, wouldn't this be a great poetic, symbolic kind of beginning period for, you know, any kind of new bubble.
Hey, remember the Netscape IPO was what began the dot-com ramp up and ramp down. And I think when you look at this billion-dollar acquisition of Instagram.
Which apparently happened completely inside Zuckerberg's head, right?
Yeah.
He just rolled into
He said, I'm going to buy this.
He rolled into the board and said, hey, I'm 57% of the board. I vote yes. So, peace, dudes. I'm going to go get Wendy's.
I mean, that's why he has that much, you know, clout.
Right.
To do these kind of...
He can do it.
Yeah. I think, you know, in many ways, people don't want to believe it, but most successful companies are essentially dictatorships. You know, look at, you know, Apple was where... Yeah. When Bill Gates was around, you know...
You don't want a committee. You don't want a committee. That's Then I you mean, get winning like, RT.
And, you know, the founder always knows a thing or two about their business,
right,
better than other people. The founder, he or she has the pulse of the business. You understand, just like you understand your kids better than anybody else. It's the same thing. And I think if Zuckerberg felt that he needed to have Instagram and basically make a big play for mobile and all these other things which are happening around in the web, he needed to buy that, and if it took $1 billion, so be it. Because it's essentially 70% of it is stock, and $300 million is in cash. So, but the reality of today's internet is that, you know, The one commodity you don't have as a successful big company is time. So if you lose the time advantage, you don't come back. Look at Motorola, you know, still struggling. You look at, you know, Microsoft itself on mobile, still struggling. RIM, because, you know, the market moves so much faster. Our world has gotten so much faster. So from that standpoint, I think you can, I'm not trying to, you know, either defend or denigrate the deal, but I think there is a certain different kind of action which is required to run a company in today's time. And I think Zuckerberg did absolutely the right thing. I think the other thing is the IPO, and I wrote about this about 6-7 months ago when the news first came out. This is going to start an 18-month cycle of sustained, you know, investment activity and, you know, euphoria in the valley. But there's a lot of people who are going to make a lot of money from this, and they're going to leave Facebook, and they're going to go become angel investors or do other things. And Facebook will have to replace those people with more people, so they will hire people at higher salaries, or they'll start buying these tiny companies to fill out their ranks. And this is going to create a flywheel effect. So just, it's pretty likely that you're going to see this thing escalate a little bit. You want to call it bubble, or you want to call it, you know, euphoria, or you want to call it whatever. It is going to happen. I mean, it's like, it's only a matter of time. And the IPO is just probably another marker for that.
Euphoria is such a great word. Is a crash inevitable? Is a crash inevitable, Ohm?
In what sense?
You said it's going to escalate, and you can call it a bubble or euphoria, whatever. The escalation is inevitable. Is a crash at the end of it inevitable, or can that be managed?
I don't think, you know, it's pretty hard to predict what the future looks like. But once these things get a momentum of their own, then, you know, then they just go either. I think most of the time they just go over the top. We had the same thing with the real estate market, right? Like, must be somebody told somebody, hey, I bought this house for $100,000 and flipped it for $250,000. Look how much money I made. And next thing you know, everybody else is doing it. And it's the same thing. You don't know quite when, you know, how this will go, but there is definitely next 12 months are going to be pretty, you know, hectic activity in Silicon Valley. That much I can tell you.
Now, I wish we had an economist on here, because there's debate over bubbles and whether they're good or bad. Sometimes, you know, one of the cases to be made for a bubble, you could point to the internet bubble of 1990s and that ended in 2000, is that a lot of all of the money that was funneled from investors into the internet economy created a huge amount of infrastructure that this second wave
took advantage of,
things like fiber in the ground and so forth, and made it possible for us to be in this situation. And what generally doesn't happen is, while you may have some ramping up like this, you generally don't have a second bubble, I don't think, right on the heels. Of course, we're in a very unusual situation.
You can't be afraid of it, right? I mean, you have to keep going out there and innovating. And if people want to spend money, I mean, you're not going to stop them from spending money. We can chastise them and say they spent too much. But these innovations are going to happen. And if it pulls back at a certain point and we, you know, the bill comes due on dumb decisions, as happened with real estate, as happened with a lot of the spending in the late 90s and early 2000s,
yeah, and
then that happens.
I mean, there's dislocations. I mean, there are people who lost everything in the housing bubble. I'm sure dot-comers who, you know, had some bad outcomes from the dot-com bubble. Not all good, obviously.
I mean, but what's important is that the progress is made. And we keep moving forward, and we keep creating, we keep innovating.
And maybe we've learned a lesson. Maybe we won't have irrational exuberance this time around.
Well, the difference is this. Go ahead, Ohm.
Sorry. I think the key, there are two things to remember, right? Like, I was there during the 90s bubble, and it was very different because we didn't really have a commercial internet base. Like, we didn't really have that many people. All these things they used to talk about didn't really make a lot of sense because there wasn't a big enough market. Now, you look at let's just look at mobile, right? 2 years ago, Instagram didn't exist. And in less than 2 years, it had 30 million people using the service. A year ago, a company called Vidly didn't exist, and now it's number one video app on iOS, right? So the velocity of the internet has increased. So has the size and scope of it.
Right.
So to, you know, it's really hard to say whether this will become a bubble or it will, you know, it'll be a normal situation, because we don't quite know, because this is all very, very new. Like it's the history can only teach us not to make mistakes, but we don't know what the future looks like, because
there's all new mistakes can be made. Yeah,
absolutely. And yeah, the scale we are playing at is very different, right? The scale of the internet is so much more bigger now. Like we have, you know, almost a billion people using wired connections to connect to the internet, almost a billion, you know, mobile internet connections. So that's a lot of people on the internet. Like, and so that's why, you know, I hesitate to use the phrase bubble, because I don't know. Does it feel like, you know, some of the things we saw in 99, do we see the same things? Absolutely. Is it the same thing? I can't tell. Like, I could tell in 99,
right,
that things were not making sense because there wasn't a big enough market, and everything was focused around the idea of investments and not building businesses. At least for now, you see companies like Facebook trying to build a business, and it's a sizable business on top of that.
But you do, I mean, I wonder what the outcome of something like a $1 billion acquisition of Instagram, and that feels bubbly because Instagram had no revenue. Of course, you can't sell anything for $1 billion if it has revenue, because then it's apparent that it's not worth $1 billion.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. I think the key is I do believe the effect of Instagram deal is going to be more mainstream, because the stories of Instagram have appeared many times. Yes. In the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, so many small papers. My mom was asking me, so what does this Instagram do? It's like, Mom, why are you even bothering with stuff right, like this?
Because it's $1 billion with a B.
Right. And I think the word of that, that's the scary part. It's sort of like, you know, the housing boom in Phoenix, near Phoenix, or in Sacramento, where everybody else feels that they should be part of it. I think there is a risk to that.
Right.
Happening. And I think, let's see, you know, next couple of months are going to be interesting.
The of course, analog of this was Mark Cuban selling broadcast.com for $1 billion to Yahoo in the last bubble. And that was pretty obviously, you know, Yahoo put it out of its misery shortly thereafter.
So you can look forward to the Instagram founders buying the Minnesota Timberwolves.
That's what I figure. I think that, you know, we're going to see Kevin Systrom throwing a chair at a referee any day now. I think they won. Somebody's saying in the chat room they won the lottery. That's right. They won the lottery. What I think the concern is, does this then cause this kind of irrational exuberance among others who say, wow, if Instagram was worth $1 billion, what is Pinterest worth? Or what is Viddy worth? Or what is, all of these other companies that have no revenue? Whereas I think when you look at Facebook, I think it's reasonable to say Facebook's worth, I don't know, they're saying it's going to be $100 billion.
And Facebook makes money. Facebook,
they make a lot of money.
Revenue.
Yeah.
And one of the concerns, I think, about the bubble is that these huge valuations are going to companies that don't appear to have any business model other than to get acquired.
By the way, Mark Cuban got $6 billion.
Ah,
for broadcast.com. Yeah. So there's the difference.
So do it 5 more times, Instagram guys, and then maybe we can
then
start talking.
Then we can buy a team.
And that was in, what, 1998?
That was when a dollar was a dollar.
Right. I just don't think that it's sustainable. And, you know, I agree with Ohm. I think there's going to be an escalation, but it just doesn't seem to me that the lessons, you know, you could make an argument that Instagram is the pets.com of
right,
its day.
Right.
That said, it does have this 30 million user base. And
but every one of those users was already a Facebook user. I mean, they didn't gain any new users.
Well, but I think what they did do is Facebook has been very good at trying to keep ahead of what the coming trend is. They don't want to be like Google, where all of a sudden they find themselves 18 miles behind in social. And they don't want to be like MySpace that, you know, found them, you know, were napping when Facebook overtook them in terms of users and influence. So if they see mobile's the future, if they see we don't want to lose our stranglehold on when people think about taking pictures with their phones and posting them somewhere, then Instagram is a very important target for them. And if it had gone to, let's say, Google, so they can fold it into Google Plus, that would have filled in a big hole for that competing social network where photo uploading is never done and it is really kind of non-existent. So I think it is, you know, it's them trying to stay relevant, trying to stay ahead of the game.
By the way, there is a... Go ahead.
There was a story in the New York Times this week, an essay in which basically, I forget who the author was, but it basically said that forget about Facebook and forget about the acquisition of Instagram. There is something else percolating out there, the next new thing. Facebook was trying to grab for it in its purchase of Instagram, but mobile is, okay, we know about mobile. There's something else that's going to happen. It was a really telling essay, you know, presenting the idea that even this too shall be eclipsed. And Facebook may have understood that when it was, or Zuckerberg may have understood that as part of the purchase, but even this too will be over the hill at some point. I think that's the story of Silicon Valley. That's kind of what we're seeing here. It's a pattern that repeats. What was that line from Battlestar Galactica? All of this has happened before.
Right. And it will happen again.
That's right. Why we love it.
Right.
Right?
I'm getting beat up in the chat room for saying that Google Plus doesn't have a lot of pictures uploaded to it. But I'll tell you, I know.
Actually.
Anecdotally, like people, I mean, I'm not saying pictures aren't uploaded to Google Plus. I think socially, it's not the
same
as
what Facebook
is. That's
not what a normal person chooses.
Exactly.
They don't choose Google. Because there's no API, you couldn't choose Google Plus unless you're using Google Plus.
Yeah. I mean, like for what people use Instagram for, I'm just out. Here's what I'm eating. Right. I had fun with my friends. I'm going to take a picture and I'm going to upload it.
And as long as we're issuing corrections, there is such a thing as transparent aluminum.
Aluminium.
Aluminium is what it's called. It is, get ready for this, aluminum or aluminium oxynitride.
Yeah.
A-L-O-N. And they knock out one of the little chemical things in the middle.
Uh-huh. Nice.
And it makes it transparent.
Dude, that's what I want my phone to be made of.
Yeah.
Metallurgist paradise on this episode.
Forget liquid metal. I want, they're going to shoot a 50 caliber round.
Oh, hell yeah.
Through this Alon plate. This is from makezine.com.
Oh, my God. This is going to be so awesome.
Yeah. Boom.
Boom.
And look at it, only slightly killed the guy. So that's too bad. But
it only just like a God hot breath.
Thank God we only used a dummy head. I don't know what I just saw there. We're having trouble with Ohm. We'll get him back as quickly as we can.
Ohm, no.
And the
Alex suffers technical setback.
The IQ of this panel just went down 300 points. Damn. I hate it when that happens. Have you seen Google, the Google, this Earth Day, you know? Happy Earth Day.
It is.
And they did, Google is nice. Show the Google Doodle. This is a nice little Google Doodle. They did a time lapse of a garden.
Aww. Oh, look at that. It's blooming.
It's blooming. My garden is blooming. I've got purple cheese.
So what, if you click it, what does it go to?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, probably something like Earth Day.
Goes to Earth Day.
Oh, just Earth Day. Okay.
Yeah.
Earth Day events from condoms to National Mall concert. Once again, it's all about condoms.
Sure.
Apparently. With Google. That's it. They're fascinated by that.
They love it.
They love it.
Oh, man.
We're going to talk about spring cleaning at Google, their adventure with James Cameron that they're planning on.
Sure. I think they're going to need protection for that Oracle lawsuit.
And then was it Quentin Hardy's piece you were talking about in the New York Times, Don't Be Evil, But Don't Miss the Train?
Yeah. No.
That's
no,
a good one, too. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, that is good.
Yeah. Lots of good stuff. But first, ladies and gentlemen, a word from Ford. You don't drive a Ford, do you?
No.
You ought to.
I should.
You ought to.
I'm dumb for not doing it.
You're
and
dumb.
I flog myself every
Ford,
day.
But it's an old one.
I drive a nice 2010 Mustang, a muscle car. You drive a Ford? Good.
2001 Mustang.
Oh, well, that's pretty good. That's nice.
Yeah, it's my...
We're in the Pony Car Club.
We are in the Pony Car Club.
Let's go get Manny Petty's and...
You're much more, you know,
skinny jeans for all.
2001 is not exactly state of the art.
No, but it's nice.
But I love it.
I love the new Fords. And in fact, if you've looked at the new Mustangs, the 2012 or 2013, I guess they are now Mustangs. Wow. They got the new engines and they're sweet. And they got this Ford Sync and the App Link, which you do not have
in yours, and you really want. This is the idea Ford had was, actually, I think it's Alan Mulally's idea, is that you really, you know, you want to fight distracted driving. Did you see the airplane pilot? They forgot to put the wheels down because they were texting?
No, I didn't. Whoopsie doodle.
This is in Australia, but still not a good thing. The guy's texting and says, oh, crap. And they had
crikey.
Crikey. Crikey, mate.
Forgot to put down my landing gear.
Here comes the land. Pull up, pull up. So,
LOL.
Nothing happened bad. Nothing. Yeah, he texted. Oh, crikey.
OMFG, mate.
But he did pull up, so nobody was hurt. But dumb, okay? That's called distracted flying. Same thing in the car. You don't want your teenagers going, you want their hands on the wheel and the eyes on the road. But, you know, they want it. I watch. It was terrifying when Abby was learning to drive a few years back. Because I'd watch, she'd drive off, and as soon as she drove off, she'd get out her iPod, and she'd be looking like this. And, let's see, I got to find. No! With the Ford Sync, you talk to your iPod or your iPhone. You tell it what to play, and it plays it. It's awesome. And now they've got this app link. So more and more developers are writing apps for the iPhone, the Android phone, the Windows phone that you can talk to, which is so cool. Pandora's one. So you say, play, you know, play my, what are the kids like today? T-Pain?
Sure. Yeah.
Akon,
you can get a little.
Drake.
Yeah.
Who's hot right now?
I like, I'm a fan of the Spinto Band is one of my favorite Pandora radio stations.
This guy, Tupac Shaker.
Yeah.
He's hot.
So, big. The Shakers, the Quakers.
Love them.
Candlestick Makers.
So,
his hologram is hot.
Yeah, that was wild with Snoop Dogg. And now you see the meme. You put Snoop. Yes. I'll show you that meme, the Snoop Dogg meme. But before I get too sidetracked into this deep rat hole, let's talk about Fords again. So you press the button, you say, pay my Tupac channel, and it'll play the Tupac songs, right? And if you thumbs up, thumbs down, all of that stuff by voice. They have iHeartRadio, so you can listen to radio stations, Stitcher, Slacker, so you can listen to podcasts like this one. They've got sync destinations, turn-by-turn directions, maps on your phone, and you talk to it. They even have a mobile app developers network for effect. If you're an app developer, you might want to check in. I bet you they get a little to the, little scratch there for anybody.
Hey, right, hey, a little something for the effort. Everybody went to the beak.
Right in the left there for the Ford. I'm just making that up. I don't tell them I told you they would give you money. Because maybe not. Maybe they will, though. I would ask. Let's put it that I would ask.
Any insinuated offer of a kickback from Ford is completely the fabrication of Leo Laporte and the Twit Network.
Kickback's such a loaded word. I wouldn't use kickback. That's not exactly the word.
I mean, just maybe there's a little money on the table. Who's it? The back of a truck.
Could be yours. It's $20 right there. That could be yours. It could be mine. It could be anybody's.
Hey, what am I? Hey, I'm the mayor. Pick it up.
Ford.com/technology if you'd like to learn more. But the best thing to do, and you should do this, you got an old Mustang. You need to go in and test drive a new Mustang. And when you do, Dwight, you want to say, I want to see AppLink. Bring your smartphone and they'll show you. They'll set it up so that AppLink is all using your phone, your apps. Very cool. Very, very cool. Give that a try,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's really neat. What I'm excited about is the number of apps we're going to see as more and more people start developing apps that work with Sync. I think it's a great idea.
Audio feedback is just...
Once you get used to it and talking to your car, it's like with the iPad now. I don't want to do email anymore because I dictate my email all the time on the iPad.
Yeah.
And now when I sit down to the computer, I go, I have to type.
Yeah. Huh. Your fingers are just like, why?
I never thought that would happen. But really, it's really true.
As soon as it gets good enough.
Right.
As soon as you can do it on the iPad. Yeah, without hesitation, as long as Siri is up.
Well, that's another problem. You dictate a paragraph and then it goes, huh?
And then it just blinks those stupid pink lights for 18 minutes. You're like, please.
You said you use your iPad more and more. Do you use the dictation on the new iPad?
No, I don't.
It's really, well, maybe because you have a little tiny bit of an accent. It might not do as well. I don't know.
That's quite true.
I've heard it doesn't do well with Scottish accents, particularly.
Yeah, Siri is just not a nice person.
In all seriousness, does Siri work well for you or no?
No.
It doesn't?
No, just because of my accent.
Really? You know, that's interesting.
I didn't know Siri was a racist.
The iPad is not Siri. The iPad is the dictation feature.
Yeah.
But it is the same thing, isn't it?
It's not very good. And I've also noticed that Dragon Dictation on the iPhone, which I have an iPhone 4, so I use Dragon Dictation, also is not as good as it used to be.
What?
And I want the Siri problem is not a Siri problem, but if Dragon's servers, which are providing dictation service for Apple, are the problem.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that when I dictate to Siri, it's not going to Apple, it's going to Nuance?
It uses Nuance technology.
Yeah.
It uses Nuance
But that's
technology.
Still Apple's servers, I would guess.
Is it? Is it?
No one knows.
It's a mystery.
I just know that Dragon isn't working as well as it used to, and I have an iPad 3. I don't have a 4S, and the dictation capabilities on the iPad are not as good as the Nuance dictation used to be on the iPhone 4. So I just wonder if it's not a Dragon problem.
Well, I mean, I think it's you. I think your accent's getting stronger because I have to tell you, it works. Really, I'm not kidding. It works great for me. I literally...
When it's up, it's great.
Right.
It's just, it's when it's like...
The only problem is when
I'm
it's
sorry,
unresponsive.
You're an idiot and you can't
It's not
get
even that.
Weather,
it's saying I'm... It's
Justin.
It's just like I'm trying really hard, but I can't help you right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really
She's
annoying.
Always unfailingly polite.
It's passive aggressive.
Doesn't mean I don't hate her.
Well, what
her.
It does is it gets the words wrong. And I, you know, I've got a radio voice, so it should do pretty well with
you
my voice.
A little bit of a Scottish accent.
Now, that's East Texas.
Oh, East Texas.
Same thing.
You know what? It's so weird. In fact, didn't we just dictate something? Or were you? Was that
yeah,
you?
Yeah, you know, on
and
path.
And it was
you,
on
you
path.
Dictated,
and I said,
there.
And I said, it was, and it worked
dirtbag.
Great. Dirtbag. It got dirtbag perfectly. Except it capitalized it, which was bizarre.
Sure.
No, if I said Wendy's dirtbag brother, Wendell, and it got it perfectly.
Boom.
And that was Siri? That was
yeah.
Siri.
Well,
it was the dictation button.
It was the dictation button.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So which is Siri?
Well, that's the question. Is it Siri or not?
Well,
we don't know.
What is in Siri is the question. Like, you are interacting with what
but
Apple
on
is.
The phone, they would say it's Siri, but on the iPad, which is exactly the same, they say what? It's not.
It's just dictation.
It's just dictation.
I guess, yeah. No, Siri technically is just the personal assistant elements of the phone. So if you ask it for the weather, if you ask it for...
It kind of reminds me of Jerry Pournelle, who always says how good Microsoft's handwriting recognition is. And then when we query him further, because it's terrible, when we query him further, he says, well, it's probably because they designed it around my handwriting. Literally. He was the example handwriting that they used. So maybe they've been using my voice for Siri, because it works really good.
Sure.
Siri, I say.
Well,
anyway,
you, Sam Jackson, and Zooey Deschanel apparently are the ones who really.
She's
get
so
it.
Cute.
Oh, she's just adorable.
She's adorable.
Isn't she?
She's adorkable, is what we say.
That's what the kids say.
Kids say adorkable.
See, Hunger Games reference, adorkable.
Yeah, two.
This
that's
demo's
two.
Dropping by the minute.
Mm-hmm. Trying to get them young. Get them young. You can keep them for life.
Sure.
I'm trying to build this network for you, Jerry. Because I'm going to be dead in a couple of years anyway.
Oh, good Lord.
So Chumby, speaking of dead. Chumby.
Twitch just took a really dark turn.
Oh, I love Chumby. Oh,
I love Chumby too, but frankly.
But once you were done awing over it and petting
it. That was it. Do you have one?
That's it, right. I had one. I gave it to my daughter, and she loved it until she forgot about it.
Right.
I think that was the problem.
It's in the closet with all the Tamagotchis and things. What, you know, I'm really curious if everybody has like old Tamagotchis that have like
sure.
been starving for 10 years and like pull them out. And if like you started to feed them again, if they'd come back to life or if they're like just dead.
No, now it's like Pet Cemetery. They come back evil.
Ooh, evil Tamagotchi. this is what they're saying at Chumby. This is what everybody says. If somebody wanted to pick up where Chumby left off, they could buy the assets tomorrow. Probably for not much money. Technicolor, apparently, has hired many of the Chumby employees to work on their own smart TV project.
Hmm.
That's kind of interesting.
Well, that's a lovable smart TV.
They were trying to pivot Chumby. Chumby, you know what? I bet you there's people listening who don't know what a Chumby is.
Yes.
It's like a beanbag with a face, right?
Just what the world needs.
It was like a little soft thing. It had a LCD screen in it. Not very good, not very big. And it would like tell you what the weather was or radio or
it
showed
it
websites.
It was Linux. It was a little Linux operating system.
It was a Linux bag.
Right. It was a Linux bag.
Bunny Wong did the development.
You could program it on the web, and then what you put on the web would show up on the bag. And later they did a version that wasn't a bag, that was kind of hard plastic, and you knew it was downhill from there when they got rid of the bag.
Yeah. It's kind of sad. So apparently
it was lovable. It was a lovable
thing.
It
was cute. Apparently over the last few years, Chumby was trying to pivot into a smart TV platform. They had deals with LG and Best Buy. And Technicolor now hired most of those people.
So there'll be something. There's some kind of...
There's the Chumby site.
You know, I bet spiritual successor for Chumby.
I bet I still have an account there. I should... That'd be
of
like
course.
The...
Of course. I mean, you have an account for everything, right?
I do.
That's your gig. That's your deal. That's your bit.
My bit. The first thing when a new site happens, I immediately get Leo.
Boom.
I'm like the guy who registered 15,000 domain names in 24 hours. Did you see that one?
No.
This is the guy you want to know. Mike Mann, M-A-N-N is his name. He is the king of internet squatters. Look at that face. Memorize that face.
Apparently in a bar where someone's wearing a Jabba Chamberlain Yankees jersey.
Yeah, so maybe he's a New Yorker.
Maybe.
It looks like he has a bathrobe on. Is that a bathrobe?
Yeah, he doesn't get up.
He does.
He has a bar in his house.
He looks like a D-bag version of the dude from The Big Lebowski.
He does.
He's wearing sunglasses in a dark bar. And he's smoking a cigarette, which he doesn't apparently do, he was quick to say. He lives in Delaware. He founded an ISP there called Internet Interstate. And he owned, just by chance, Menus.com, got offered $50,000 for it. And he said, whoa, wait a minute.
There's money in being an impediment to progress.
Yes. So,
hello, trolldom.
So he's now registering domain names, new domains, not buying old domains. He's like trying to find new domains.
So I'm sure he snagged up Chumby TV.
His business, you may have heard of it, Buy Domains. He's actually sold that for $80 million in 2005. And he has a patent for a system he developed to generate domain name recognitions and recommendations. And then register the domain name.
Well, I mean, this is...
So you say to the software, Chumby, and he goes... And it's got 20 names like that.
Well, that's why I've always been nervous about whenever I search for a domain for like a project, I won't search for it via whatever the registrar stuff is, because that you can...
That's kind of a trigger to say...
Yeah, because they'll know that you're looking for that. So you just you type in the URL and you just pray it doesn't load.
This has always been, and I, you know, it's always been the internet rumor that if you go to, let's say, GoDaddy.
Let's say theoretically.
Theoretically.
Sure.
And you enter in a domain name and it's available, but you don't buy it. You come back 5 minutes later and somebody's got it.
Yep.
It's interesting how that always happens. It's very weird.
When anyway, I tried to buy the URL the Facebook.com.
The guy now averages 300 names a day. And his company's called DomainMarket.com. He makes almost $500,000 a month doing this.
Yipes.
Wow.
It's just wild. I don't know how he bought 15,000 domain names in one day, though. It must be automated, right?
Script.
Yeah. Well, this is the kind of stuff that we should... I mean, if there are going to be laws for squatting, I mean, isn't this the kind of behavior we want to protect against?
The good news is if you have a trademark and he has your domain, you can go to ICANN and say, no, I have the trademark TWIT. Give me that domain.
Yeah.
And he has to surrender it. So really,
but that's a process, and it's a process that he might be very willing to circumvent.
And if you
for
don't have a trademark, like your name, Justin Robert Young, is not a trademark.
No.
Do you have JustinRobertYoung.com?
I do. I have JustinRobertYoung.com.
I don't have LeoLaporte.com. Somebody else has that.
Who does?
I don't know. Some guy
named
Leo
Laporte. What do you want to do? Find the guy?
Yeah.
Get him?
Yeah. Break his legs. Kneecap him. No.
No, don't.
William Shatner. That's all.
That's all you need.
That's all.
We're just going to randomly... This is like a radio contest. You're going to say actors' names, and if you collect all of them over the month of April, then you can send in
collect
for a prize.
All the names.
Send it to P.O. Box.
He has 1 million followers. He got his 1 millionth, and he took him to dinner.
Aw.
There they are at dinner.
Tech savvy William Shatner, huh? You can't even shoot in landscape. Can we make it so?
And it's pitch black.
Yeah. Oh, look. There we go.
They turned it sideways.
Halfway. Even on his iPhone, Shatner hates doing two takes.
Yeah. P-D-O-X, P-Dox Jr., and his wife, Mrs. P-Dox. They were in Charlotte, North Carolina.
I'll tell you, it is...
How about that, huh?
It is fascinating how much he is savvy with understanding the rabid Star Trek.
That's pretty savvy, isn't it? That's pretty savvy to do that. He's got 1,022,000 followers.
I mean, I think like he gets it. There is something to be learned from Shatner for a lot of people that actors that have conflicted ideas on the fact that there's a certain genre or a television show that they're famous for.
He's not doing this himself though. He's probably got somebody.
Oh, he's got
a publicist. He does someone doing it. He does. Yeah, he has said that he's like never actually touched Twitter, but he has someone doing this for him. But
it's somebody he trusts.
Remember, he appeared on Saturday Night Live making fun of his own fan base,
right?
Yeah,
in that famous skit where he said,
"Get alive!"
Right.
And this is his most recent tweet. The crew of the International Space Station listens to my Seeking Major Tom album. Have you heard William Shatner's Major Tom?
Sure.
This is the International Space Station, a special message.
Hey, guys. 6 months in space is a long time. And if you listen to my record, the time will pass by quickly. Not quickly enough, but you've got so much to do up there. I wish you really good luck, good health, get some good work done, and we'll look forward to your
coming. Isn't that great?
And I hope you enjoy Seeking Major Tom. And I'm floating in a most peculiar way. And the stars look...
Apparently, yeah. No, this is, as the chat room is pointing out, that he's a Cyloning. I don't know what the...
I don't know why the sound is so bad.
The sound is weird.
That's, William Shatner right there. In a nutshell, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not following him. I missed out on that dinner if I had just pressed the button at the right time.
Look at that.
And it now says I might want to follow Paul Camusso and Julie Benz. I don't even know why.
They weren't captains.
Do you follow Nimoy, who's also on there?
No. What's his...
Yeah, Nimoy's on there.
What's his
I think he's the real Nimoy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I forget.
That looks like him.
Oh, there he is. There he is.
Oh, there he is. The real Nimoy. Check mark.
Here we go.
Following. I'm already following him. And see? I didn't even know it.
See, now next week, Leo will follow the cast of Next Generation.
This could be an ongoing...
Followed by Voyager.
Ongoing process here.
Yeah, he signs off all his tweets with LLAP.
What's that? Live long and prosper.
Boom.
I thought about it. Thought of it.
I'll tell you, did you guys hear the soft subscription numbers for Netflix?
No.
Yeah, coming in tomorrow, I think, is their earnings call. But all the rumors sort of leaked out.
I'm rooting for these guys. Aren't you rooting for Netflix?
Oh, listen, Netflix is to me every bit the cultural touchstone that HBO was in the 80s and 90s and everything.
I love them.
I think it's great.
And I've been watching Lillehammer to prepare to go to Norway.
Well, there we
right. That's their original productions. They're doing now King of Hearts.
Yeah,
with George Spacey. Kevin Spacey. I'm excited. I think that
Arrested Development is the big
they
splashy.
Saved Arrested Development.
The thing. But although I'll tell you what, I think that they're really making a mistake because they announced this week. Actually, I think it was there's one of the corporate leadership there announced that NAB or told somebody at NAB that they're going to, their philosophy is going to be release the entire season as they did with Lillehammer
at once. So like Netflix, so you can watch
episodes.
It all. You have to, because that's the culture of Netflix, is you consume, you binge consume shows.
I think that's a horrible mistake.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You think they should parse it out?
Because like HBO, HBO doesn't necessarily care as much about user or viewership.
They really
numbers.
Don't.
They care about awards.
Right.
They care about press.
Right.
Because every time that they get an award, every time that they get press, it's a free advertisement that HBO is something you should buy. And you're constantly reminding people that this is something that you should be paying money for. Arrested Development is a very beloved show that critics will give the benefit of the doubt and
right.
will want to talk about and will create a significant internet buzz. When they drop all 10 episodes, that buzz will last for 3 weeks. If they released these 10 episodes over the course of 10 weeks, you would consistently be talking about what the last episode was, what the next episode's going to be, and you can spread that out and continue to get an advertising drive for people to be aware of Netflix and think, well, maybe I should subscribe to Netflix now. I mean, it's the same reason why people advertise on the Twit Network, why Netflix advertises on the Twit Network, because they consistently on all these and all the shows on the platform remind you, this is a thing, this is a thing, this is a thing. You'll like this thing. And I think they're really dropping the ball in putting it all out at once.
I'm not sure I agree. I think it's a new culture. That's the old culture. And the Netflix culture is you watch, you know, 24 hours and you watch every episode of season 4 of Battlestar Galactica in one gigantic gulp.
Yes, but they're also dropping subscribers.
Are they?
And then you tell your friends and they tell your friends, right. And watching all that takes a lot of time. And that's how Netflix has built its audience, is really almost by word of mouth and those annoying pop-up ads, of course. But pop-unders. But this is how Netflix has won so far, and I think that they are smart to continue dropping it in this way. The fact they drop it all at once, they will generate a lot of buzz, and I think it'll actually happen over time as more and more people take the time to watch it.
Well, and you have to be careful, too. You don't want to do it in a way that annoys you. So what are the soft numbers? Are they bad?
Well, here, let me pull up the actual numbers.
They haven't
announced it. Tomorrow's their earnings call.
Right.
And so it's...
Could you do their earnings call as Netflix hype man for us?
Well, no. I have Twit hype man. I don't know. I mean, we could be saving you time, money, and hassle with Netflix. But,
I don't actually have a Netflix ad on this show. I really should.
That's the one read that I always struggle with.
You?
On
really?
NSFW show.
Why?
Just because... Let's just say
you love
that
Netflix, don't you?
I know, I love it. No. It's not that I struggle with it because I don't enjoy it. I am a customer, a happy, very happy customer of Netflix.
I got it. You know, my problem is I got five DVDs in the hutch. They've got this much dust on them. I've got to cancel that DVD subscription.
Yeah.
I never use them.
I've been digital only for a very long time. But
then I got to get rid of the hutch because nobody says about
hutch. Oh, hutches. They're so old fashioned.
What do you call that thing that the TV's on? It's not a hutch. It's just a
credenza. Home entertainment center.
No, I don't want to have one of those. It might be that, but I don't want to call it that. A credenza?
We have one of those too.
It's a credenza.
Unfortunately.
What is it called? I guess it's a home entertainment
center. A credenza, I think, is if the thing
that's
that you're sitting on.
That's a little fruity, a little hoity toity. Yeah.
We have a 1980s era. Remember Blonde Oak?
Yeah.
Blonde Oak Home Entertainment Center with two columns on either side.
You're going to love this new IKEA TV. It'll go very well with that.
Oh, I need that. I saw that. I want
IKEA is going to sell TVs, according to the Wall Street Journal, with the furniture built into the furniture. So you'll have to use an Allen wrench and a little thing to put your TV together? I know. I hope not.
Okay, real quick with the Netflix thing. The numbers that are expected to be announced this week will show that although they did have an increased number of members, it was soft enough that they will be posting a negative profit for the company in large part because of the renegotiated contracts, because now they're on contracts two and three with the streaming rights.
That's their problem, is that they're doing well, but their business, it's like Kodak. Their business model is based on the more profitable business, you know, deals that they had with the movie companies, you know, a few years ago. And maybe they can't be profitable at $7.99 a month. I don't know.
Well, no, but this is the reason why new subscribers are the only thing that matters. In the same way for HBO. And no matter what you do, you always, if you're Netflix, you have to be thinking about how many new people
can we get. And you think they get more new subscribers by dribbling it out.
For Arrested Development specifically. I'm not saying for everything. I'm saying for a show that has a tremendous splash.
Because they come back, because then people come back every week and they see the other stuff.
It's just that you're going to have critics talking about it every episode. If you released it episode by episode, then all of a sudden you get the blogs writing about it. You get television sites writing about it.
You get more continuous coverage.
Because that will spread it over 10 weeks. And then it's going to be there forever.
He's got a point. So the IKEA TV.
Yes.
Look at this. They put a TV in a hutch.
Finally.
Yeah.
I'm sick of these TV-less hutches. I'm looking at my hutch.
I'm never buying another hutch without a TV.
What are you doing, hutch?
It's got an LED TV, a sound system with wireless bass speakers that you could put somewhere else, internet connection, CD, DVD, Blu-ray player, all together, all the controls in one remote. This is, unfortunately, you have to buy a TV made by a company called Tickle.
Teehee?
It's a teehee, not a TV.
Look at me. It's a Tickle TV.
Tickle TV. TCL makes it. It's a Chinese manufacturer. And they come in four sizes, just like condoms, from 24 inches. Is that not true? 24 inches to 46. They're not that big. It's called the up. Now I have to say this in Swedish. Is it the upleva? Upleva. It's it comes in a flat pack, and you gotta assemble it at home. I can't believe they do that. They're gonna sell it first in Sweden, France, Poland, Germany, and Italy in June, but worldwide for a mere 6,500 kroner by first half of next year.
So is this the 21st century version of the TV set in the credenza from the 1960s?
It's exactly what it is. You're right.
That's what it is.
It's so funny.
Works in a drawer. It's a quasar.
There was that great moment in for those of you who watch Mad Men where Campbell is showing off his big Hutch stereo system that's like 7 feet wide.
That's in last week. I haven't seen it yet.
Last week's episode. And that's like that happened, and then like the next day this news hit about the IKEA TV and a Hutch thing, and it's like
it's back.
It's like what Dwight said. All of this has happened before and it will happen again.
You know who else is
Will Chamberlain could lay down in it.
You know who else is going to do their own TV shows is Hulu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Original programming. That's the wave of the future. And you know it's only going to be a couple years before when we saw movie stars, the lines between a movie star doing a television show kind of was sort of broken down about 5 or 6 right. years ago, and you started to see guys like Gary Sinise or
right.
people that were otherwise
doing TV.
Yeah, Lawrence Fishburne doing television.
Right.
You're going to start to see, especially because these stars have enough money to fund the budgets and be producers on web content shows, and you're going to see more and more that these are going to be viable places where real acting talent and writing talent and directing talent will come to get original visions out to people that want to see them.
But there's a risk here because remember, Hulu was originally started to take network programming from NBC, Fox, and others and put it on the internet because these guys couldn't figure it out. Well, they were investors in it, so this was their idea. And now they're kind of competing, aren't they, with these companies? Hulu, I didn't realize this, $8 a month, very similar to Netflix streaming.
Yeah, but you have to have ads. You watch ads
and
on
it's
Hulu.
2 million subscribers, though. That's a good number. What is Netflix? Does it say?
Yeah, we can find that out.
It's got to be more than 2 million. 24? Yeah, that sounds better. Yeah.
If you were 2 million paid subscribers, that's paid.
Hulu or, Plus. Yeah. Hulu Plus.
They also have a free.
No, that's 2 million Hulu Plus subscribers, according to this. They've got 38 million visits a month, uniques a month. So they're in the ballpark of Netflix.
Well, no, 2 million versus 24
million. What's the
future?
What's the future like for these services? What do you see in your crystal ball?
Oh, not in my crystal ball. I see on my iPad a lot of television.
Yeah.
And I don't really make any difference in what kind of television I watch, right? It could be Hulu, it could be Netflix, it could be HBO, it could be Vimeo. It could be, I watch
could be Twit. Anything.
It could be Twit.
You don't care.
I don't care. For me, I watch video, right?
Yeah.
I have no concept of differentiation between various services. I just look for things I want to watch and things which people tell me are interesting, right? Like if people were not talking about Mad Men, it won't be very interesting. It might be a great show. And it's the same way people talk about other things. So I think the whole notion of what is television is changing. What is video is changing. We shall see, how this evolves. My view is we're going to see one more service come out, which will be like Netflix and Hulu, but it will be slightly different. And that would be the third competitor in this space.
And how will it be different? And who will do this?
And I think it'll be a brand new company. It could be somebody like you who takes, just has no preconceived notions of
that's what
video.
It needs to be. I mean, that's what held Hulu back was these connections with
that's
existing
correct.
Networks. And it's what's hurt Netflix is they need content from the movie companies. Both of them are trying to divorce themselves from their past, in effect. But right. isn't the conventional wisdom that people don't want all these little bills? Or has that changed? It used to be people say, oh, another $8 a month bill. I don't want another one.
Well, I think it all depends on how good the billing systems become, right? So if you look at the Apple iTunes billing system or Amazon's billing system,
it's transparent.
It's pretty easy to kind of subscribe right. a la carte, right? You can go, I want MLB, I want NBA,
right.
and I want some HBO.
And now even some. Netflix, like you can buy Netflix through iTunes, yeah. which was a brilliant move from a Netflix point of view.
Right. So Netflix is just a cable channel.
Right.
I don't care what kind of content they have. And they, you know, like I used to think that they don't have the cutting edge content and that's going to have an impact. Well, really, you know, you watch TV for about 30, 40 minutes after dinner. And it doesn't matter, like, what you're watching. Sometimes you're watching the new shows.
It doesn't. Sometimes it's Jeopardy. It doesn't. Yeah, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Like, you know, I get more.
But I will not watch Wheel of Fortune. I'm sorry.
Everyone has standards.
Okay. All right. We're not going to push you. I like watching Vimeo. I like watching the, you
well,
know.
Well, all right. Apps. I've got a suggestion, then, for this third competitor to Hulu and Netflix. YouTube.
I mean, they yeah. certainly hope that's it.
Will Google, you think Google will try to start packaging this?
They already are doing that.
They've got these new channels, right? They spent $100 million on brand names like Shaquille O'Neal and Felicia Day. There's two names you don't hear together a lot.
Finally. Together at last.
Finally, yeah.
Shaq and Felicia Day.
That just is, you know, match made in heaven.
No, but I think that's interesting that YouTube, clearly that's where YouTube wants to be. But Google is so tone deaf, just like Microsoft sometimes when it comes to making popular content.
Although Google's already in place on a lot of smart TVs. If you look at Samsung.
YouTube's everywhere.
Or yep. LG or yep. any of the ones that have TVs.
Right.
There's a Google app.
Roku.
Google module. They're kind of already there.
Yep.
They're on Boxy.
They're on Apple
Roku,
TV.
They're on, you know, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
And so they kind of are in place. They just have to get people. They have to make it easier to get people to move over there and click on it.
I'll tell you, I come home sometimes, and my teenage son, 17 years old, sitting around with his bros. There's like 7 or 8 of them. What?
It's just funny.
That's what they're called, bros.
Yeah.
And
bros. Hey, Dad, it's just bros. Me and my bros hanging out.
Exactly.
What are you going to hassle me?
Okay, and they're sitting and they're watching YouTube.
Yeah.
But on the HD TV, they probably use the Apple TV or maybe Roku, and that's what they're doing. They're sitting there watching YouTube like it's television. And they're choosing videos, they're watching it. Weirdest thing is, and so then last night it was the big UFC championship. I'm sure you watched that, 145.
I did not get a chance.
Oh, my God, it was amazing. But anyway.
Is it like John Bones Jones versus Sugar Rashad Evans, right?
Very good.
I'm good.
You are a UFC fan.
I read things.
And Jones, who actually weirdly has no calves in his legs, it's a very strange look, kicked the hell out of Rashad. But anyway, that's another story for another day. So, but that was $60 pay-per-view.
Yeah.
$60. So they're watching YouTube, they're watching the $60 thing, and then there's kids sitting with their laptops, and they're watching more YouTube on the laptops while the $60 pay-per-view is on.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, what a world.
Well, you know, I mean, YouTube certainly hopes that this is the place where you can get free content that will compete with what Hulu and Netflix are trying to do.
Instead of $7.99 a month, it'll be...
Yeah.
But okay, so how long is YouTube just going to eschew what Netflix and Hulu are doing, which is the traditional 22-minute television show or whatever it is?
Well, Google only cares about selling ads or putting ads in front of you.
So they're not going to do...
You're
not going to see New Girl on YouTube, or are you?
I mean, it would surprise me if they want to do that. Although I think we are seeing a very
wouldn't it have been
a very interesting evolution of where
YouTube
these contracts are going.
Brought back Arrested Development and it was a YouTube production? Wouldn't that have been interesting?
I mean, you know, I think it's certainly within their power. If let's say theoretically, you know, somebody at YouTube had said instead of dumping all this money into a lot of these other independent producers or established brand names to make YouTube videos, if they had brought back Firefly, you know, would that have been a very popular thing that they could put ads on? It'd be interesting.
Om, you wrote on Giga Om about Google's dilemma, which is, you know, the fact, and there's that New York Times article we talked about as well, which is that you're in a landscape with aggressive, well-funded, big competitors, and you're trying to do no evil. It doesn't work.
Well, I think they have a lot of challenges, so they have to go into different markets. You know, they have Facebook and Apple and Amazon all pushing and pulling them in different directions, and they have to compete with them. I think, and all this is new competitive landscape for them. So,
hence Google Plus.
And, you know, Google Plus, I'm not even sure what problem it solves for me. I don't think I have a problem with Facebook or Twitter. Right. I have a problem using those things. I don't have a problem, per se, in that service. Like, I don't have time.
It's the Windows Phone problem. It doesn't answer a need.
You know, exactly. And I think it's solving Google's problems. And I think that's what I mean by company doing unnatural things. Google core competency was you go there, look for make a query and go elsewhere. That was the behavior on Google. And that behavior turned Google into a mega-billion-dollar corporation because it created a lot of happy people everywhere you go. You know, everybody started using the idea of Google it. Like the Google it became it changed how society behaved. Right? It stopped bookmarking our whole behavior towards information changed how we consumed it. Now they have a different problem, and I don't think they are looking at it in a very rational manner, in my opinion.
Instead of solving their customers' problems,
they're solving their own problems.
Any good company would do. They're solving their own problems, and nobody wants the solution.
And right now, they have gone from being a company whose main customer was you and I to a main company whose main customer is the advertiser.
Yeah.
So I think there is that push and pull, which does exist. And they have to do it. It's not like they have a choice because they are a publicly traded company. They need to make money. They need to have earnings. They need to show growth. If they don't have growth, the stock's going to fall. Engineers are going to leave, et cetera, et cetera. So it is a dilemma for them.
Is this kind of another form of the innovator's dilemma, really?
Yeah, it's essentially what it is. The interesting part with Google is it's facing innovator's dilemma in less than a decade.
I know. Right? Amazing.
That's what I meant earlier, that the internet and the connectivity has changed the metabolism of the technology industry. And Google, you're seeing it. I mean, I don't think... You know, Facebook can assume that they're going to be the king of the web 5 years from now. They cannot assume that because things could just so radically change. Look, you know, Google was started in our time. We all saw it come out of nowhere and become this giant. And now they're suffering from an innovator's dilemma. Right? They're doing all these interesting things, except, you know, they're not really that interesting in a larger scheme of things as they are a bigger company. I think it'll be an interesting one to see what happens. I wish they would put more resources towards YouTube, in my opinion. I think YouTube is like an undervalued asset they have. Just like I think they need to kind of get really serious about Android. They should stop mucking about, you know, Google Plus and things like that and focus on Android and YouTube and a couple of places where they're succeeding right now.
It's funny because... I've said they should get rid of YouTube because to me it's a channel conflict because they, you know, in search they favor their own products. And as somebody who competes with YouTube, that's a problem for me in search. Right. And so, but you're right. I mean, if you look at what their assets are, you can start to replace search with YouTube and a few other products, but search is starting to give way.
Yeah. What's funny is that during the Oracle Google trial, which happened last week also, Larry Page said that Android was merely a vehicle to deliver Google's advertising services.
That was kind of a self-serving.
He said it was – he didn't consider Android to be critical to Google, which just is either a lie or it's astonishing in its naivete of what's happening – in personal technology.
It's exactly the opposite of what you just said, Om, which is that Android is one of their crown jewels.
I mean,
but it is for ads, right? I mean, like, no.
that's not inaccurate, but saying it's not that important, it's not a big deal.
Well, that's, I mean, then why do they go and buy, you know, Motorola, you know?
I don't know. It's fascinating. We live in a very interesting time. I'm going to take a break because... like Google, I don't really care about our audience. I care about our advertisers.
I'm gonna grow up, kids. How do you think you put the dinner on the table?
How do you think I paid for $60 UFC tickets? I can tell you right now. There's another pay-per-view coming up.
Exactly.
No, I do.
Moving subs.
We do care about our audience. That's why we only do 4 commercials instead of how many would there be if this were broadcast? 30 or 40 commercials.
Absolutely.
I do want to mention Audible.com. The truth is, frankly, if I were smart, I would not do ads for this company because we lose listeners every week to Audible.com. It's nuts.
Yeah.
This is such a great thing. This is the audiobooks, 100,000 books. Instead of listening to podcasts, you're probably listening to books now.
Yeah,
in fact,
sure.
You're not even hearing this ad because you love Audible. Now, if you are hearing this ad, then this is your last chance because you got to listen to Audible. I got 2 books for you. So, no, I mean, I don't have 2 picks. Maybe you guys could help me. But
sure.
Definitely, this is something you want to take a look at. 2 books for free. If you go to audible.com/twit, the number 2, you'll sign up for the Platinum Plan. That's 2 books a month. First month's free. First 2 books are free. They're yours to keep forever. Cancel at any time. But what do you want to listen to? That's the question. There's so many good
choices.
I'll
tell you what. I, over the last couple months, have just completely torn up the Song of Ice and Fire series.
I've listened to the first 2. How many are there? 5, right?
Yeah, I'm on the final, or the most one. Not the final one, but the most recent, the Dance of or with Dragons.
So there's Game of Thrones, which has already been on HBO. Now HBO's doing Clash of Kings.
Clash of Kings.
That's book 2.
Yep.
Next, I presume they're going to keep doing all of them because it's a hit. Storm of Swords, Feast for Crows.
But that's been greenlit by HBO. So season 3's been greenlit. That'll
good.
Be Feast for...
Dance with Dragons.
Yeah, Dance with Dragons.
And that's what you're listening
narrated
to.
Narrated by Roy Dotrice.
Yeah, he came back and did that, didn't he? Good man.
Yeah, yeah. They're fantastic. I'll tell you what. Take it from me, folks. I was, as a Twit listener, got on Audible, and I haven't looked back. I've been a super happy subscriber.
He hasn't listened to Twit in months as a result.
I don't even listen to myself.
Yeah. Who has time? There's too many great books. This is 2 credits, Game of Thrones. So if you haven't started this yet, this is perfect. You can get that for free at audible.com/twit2. They've really done a great job on sci-fi and fantasy, but they've also got bestsellers. I'm listening to a wonderful novel right now by Ann Patchett called State of Wonder that I just – it's kind of like – did you must have loved Life of Pi. Everybody's read Life of Pi, I hope. If you haven't read Life of Pi
–
you will cry your eyes out at the end
really?
Of this book. Oh, yeah.
My soul's dead, Leo.
Well, even for somebody like you who is a lifeless – a zombie.
An automaton. A golem.
You will love this because this is one of the most beautiful books. If you saw the movie, forget everything you saw and listen to this book. And it's beautifully performed by Jeff Woodman. I just loved this book. The Alchemist. There's another classic. Paul Coelho. Watership Down. Look, there's so many great books. I want you to go right now to audible.com/twit2. Pick 2. Make them your life. And give
your life to Audible.
It's the only thing to do.
It is the only way.
Yes. You do read. You do. You're good. You surprise me. Because Justin Rubio.
Really?
Because I see you as the buffoon that you appear to be on NSFW.
Court jester.
But in fact, when you do those readings, you come alive. You're an actor.
Oh, no. Yeah, I try to be silly. You know, I do a bunch of stuff.
And you do those people... Should listen to your podcast, weirdthings.com.
Weird Things, and I mean, NSFW, of course, on the Twit Network. Let me also point out that if you enjoyed any of the conversation that we had about Netflix and the future of online video, frame rate. With Tom Merritt and Brian Brushwood is fantastic.
Love that show.
Where they
and
just...
I wish more people listened to this.
Yeah. Well,
they're all listening to Audible books now.
They're listening to Roy Dotrice. Yeah. Just pretend that Tom's Roy Dotrice.
You got a new show.
Yes. Speaking of audio books, Andrew Main Stories, my friend and business partner, Andrew Main, is a writer. Public Enemy Zero is probably his most popular book, which actually was
incredible.
Just optioned.
Was it?
Yeah, feature film.
It'll make a great movie.
The feature film rights. I don't know at what stage the signatures are at, but a producer who has produced a franchise of very successful summer movies is hoping to transform that book into a movie. And I really, I'm very excited about it. But check that out. Andrew Main Stories is me reading
original short stories from Andrew Mayne every single week. So download that podcast on iTunes right now. Or if you like reading things, Angel Killer is his new book. That's available on Amazon for only 99 cents.
And this is going to be a plug for you, and you've suddenly made it an Andrew Mayne plug.
That's all the same.
You're a nice guy. Are you actually Andrew Mayne?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Probably not. He's much taller.
Om Malik blogs at gigaom.com and his own personal blog, which is the best design blog in the world, om.co. I love it.
Thank you. I'm glad you like that.
Oh, I love what you did. In fact, when we started, whoops, I got the wrong one. I got the NASDAQ.
om.co.
Oh, if you do .com, you get the NASDAQ. That's interesting.
I've been trying to get that for so long.
But om.co is nice and short. And it's just it's a personal blog. It's beautiful. It's just gorgeous.
That was great.
Isn't that nice? Very nice. Anyway, Om, it's always so wonderful to have you here. You're so smart. We didn't even talk about James Cameron and what he's going to do with Google. You did an interview with him.
No, not me. One of our writers did.
Okay.
Ian Lawler. He's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and Cameron's going to do something with the Goog.
Well, it's Google guys, Peter Diamantis from the XPRIZE, and they're going to announce, I mean, what everybody kind of suspects will be asteroid mining, which would be amazing.
That is the future, by the way. I've been saying that for years. No, really. Anyway, Om, thank you for being here. Thanks for Giga Om, and thanks for Om.co.
Okay, thank you.
Great to have you.
I will talk to you soon.
Soon. And enjoy that.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Always a pleasure.
Take care.
Mr. Dwight Silverman is at blogs.cron.com and the host of, he's the Houston Chronicle tech blogger and also the host of Technology Bites on the Pacific Radio Network down there in Houston.
Yep, that airs Wednesday night at kpft.org or 90.1 FM if you're here in Houston. I just want to say, Leo, I really appreciate you having me on every time, but particularly getting the chance to be on with Om, who I have admired for years and years. We've talked a couple of times on the phone, and it's been one of my hopes that I'd get a chance to do a show with him, and I appreciate you making that happen.
Oh, I feel the same way. It's always a thrill to have Om on, and I'm glad I could get you two together.
You guys are so kind. Thank you.
No, you are the kind of the eminence grise. No, that's wrong. That's the wrong phrase. But you are the eminent Om Malik.
I just feel terrible taking airtime away from Dwight and Om. Because, you know, if Leo, if you're the Yoda of tech and Om is the Obi-Wan Kenobi, then I'm the Jar Jar Binks.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's very good.
Do I get to be the Darth Maul?
Yes.
There you go. Right, Duel of the Fates.
Hey, let's find out what's coming up. We got a big week ahead. Tom Merritt in our TNT newsroom has the week ahead.
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's some of the stories we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead on Tech News Today. Monday, April 23rd, the Intel-powered Lava Zolo, their first big push into the mobile market, goes on sale in India for 22,000 rupees.
Risa, what's
also, Netflix has their earnings report on Monday. Tuesday, April 24th, Google I.O. kicks off down in the peninsula, and Apple has their earnings report. Wednesday, April 25th, the Next Web kicks off, and the HTC One S hits the shelves.
That's
Thursday,
nice.
April 26th, very Max nice. Payne Mobile comes to Android, and Amazon and Zynga have their earnings report. It's an earnings week. And Friday, April 27th, the Kindle Touch touches down in Europe. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
The Lala Zolo?
Is that like YOLO?
What the hell? I thought WinRT was a bad name. All right.
Tech News Today, by the way, is like my addiction.
Every day, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, you can tune in for your daily fix of tech news with Tom and Iaz and Sarah. And it really
best in the biz.
It is a great team and a great show. We thank you for watching it. And we thank you for joining us. We do this show every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2200 UTC. At twin.tv. Sometimes I do it with a small dog in my life. For those of you listening, you'll never know why.
No, this is like your, like CeeLo Green has the cats, you know, on The Voice. Yeah. Like, you have Ozzy.
Does CeeLo hold a cat on The Voice?
That's his bit.
He's got a white cat. It's called Perfect Cat. Has a Twitter account as well.
Ozzy is the real Ozzy on Twitter.
There we go.
Yeah. Because Ozzy Osbourne had that Ozzy Osbourne, so we are the real Ozzy.
The real Ozzy.
The real Ozzy.
Maybe you can acquire him for $1 billion.
Veronica used to hold him around this time, and he's been actually totally listless and lifeless and despondent.
And who can blame them?
Yeah. Don't worry. We'll find another woman to hold you someday. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another twit.
This is in the can. Amazing.